ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Joey Galloway and Kevin Negandhi.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. It is a Thursday, October 21st. Kevin Negandhi here with you. Really fun podcast today. Joey Galloway bringing the energy. We talk a little bit about the Heisman race and how wide open it is. Andrea Adelson brings the heat as well, discussing the Clemson-Pitt matchup. Also, the very latest surrounding two big programs with high expectations entering the year and the disappointment surrounding both of them, and that is Miami and Manny Diaz, and what is going on at Florida surrounding their quarterback situation. Before we get to Joey and Andrea, we're so excited about our new weekday studio show, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, doing a great job this week, tipping off the start of the NBA season with exclusive content. You can watch it on ESPN, weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, how about a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the very latest from around the NBA. That is NBA Today, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. You can also listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. It's been a fantastic week for Malika and that entire crew. Happy for them. And for all of you fantasy football nerds out there, don't sleep on the Fantasy Focus Football. 5 days a week. Streaming on ESPN Plus and available wherever you listen to your podcast. Here's Joey. Great to have Joey Galloway here with us on this Thursday. Joey, before we get to our picks, I do want to hear your thoughts because it's been a weird season so far. And on the field with teams, with rankings, with conversations of the playoff, but one other race has been weird, has been the Heisman. And I want to just get your thoughts on where we're at after 7 weeks heading into week eight, where you got Bryce Young there at number one, according to the odds. Matt Corral, CJ Stroud, who's been fantastic the last couple of games. And then you get Caleb Williams into the conversation, the Oklahoma quarterback who has just one start under his belt. What do you make of where we are with the Heisman and the idea that you could have Caleb Williams, because of Lincoln Riley's track record with Heisman winners in that offense, in the conversation now? Still a long shot, but inside the top five.
I think it has just said what this football season has really been so far up to now anyhow. With all the upsets, all the top five teams that have lost already, I think outside of Georgia, the rest of the entire college football season has been something we've never seen before. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to the Heisman, and honestly, like, it feels like it's still wide open. You know, if at this stage, if Bryce Young was to win it, it would almost feel as if it was by default. It was like, here you go. Mm-hmm. Nobody else sort of like took over this thing. And so this entire season has been strange. So why wouldn't the Heisman race also be that same feeling of what are we doing here at this stage of the season to have one team that has separated themselves from everyone else is strange in itself. And so is the Heisman race.
And we won't have. If Bryce Young were to win, we wouldn't have that Heisman moment, it feels like, right? Because he won't be facing Georgia until the SEC championship game, right? That's why I kind of circle a guy like CJ Stroud, where he's got Penn State next week, Michigan at the end of the season. He could have that moment. And you brought up Georgia and that defensive unit. They're the only thing we can, I feel like, count on all season long. Not even a team. They're the only unit we can count on. A close second, I feel we are trending towards Ohio State's offense. That's the one unit we could count on. Do you feel that confidence there growing with CJ, considering all the weapons that he has after that sluggish start?
I would also say you can count on a Georgia run game, Kev. I don't look at that Georgia offense and think that they're not very good. I just think that what they do isn't sexy. They're a run football team. Stetson Bennett has come along. threw the ball well last game. And so I think that Georgia offense is actually better than most people give it credit for. On the Ohio State side, I think we need to get into the Big Ten East a little more. And so we've seen Ohio State, which, you know, I've moved them up to number three in my rankings. I think that, you know, outside of Georgia, I think you put the other five, six teams in a bag, shake them up, and there's no real great argument for anybody else to be above anybody else. So it's sort of like I got them in three. The games they played, though, Rutgers, Maryland.
Aren't confidence builders.
Yeah, exactly. They are the greatest test in the world. And so we will see, though. That's the best part about the Big Ten East is it is legit. Hopefully for Penn State, Sean Clifford comes back healthy because this is going to be fun if Penn State has Sean Clifford. If they don't, it'll be a little bit of a different story. But C.J. Stroud will absolutely have his time, his moments, his games to make his statement. As to being a great quarterback and maybe a Heisman Trophy finalist.
Next few weeks are going to be a lot of fun. Of course, next weekend, it's Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State. Yeah. We'll learn a lot more about the division, the best division in all of college football. Who's number two on your list? You got Georgia number one, Ohio State number three. Who's number two?
I guess Cincinnati at number two. And look, it's unfortunate for Cincinnati that Indiana is not looking to be the Indiana that we thought they were going to be. So that'll take away a little bit from that resume. Who knows what Notre Dame is? They've struggled offensively, which is sort of a surprise to see their offensive line struggle the way they have. So it's unfortunate for Cincinnati, but I think this Cincinnati team is extremely talented and could play with any one of these guys outside of Georgia would make me a little nervous. But everyone else, Cincinnati is right there.
You know what Cincinnati has to do? They got to keep their fingers crossed and hope Notre Dame continues to win. That makes the value of going to South Bend look even better and better. And they've got a rivalry game. Let's get to our picks here. And that rivalry game, of course, features it's just a weird vibe with USC coming to town. Taylor, can we get a recap of our picks before we go down the line here? And look at Joey with that big cheesy grin.
He knows what's going on. You guys only differed on one game last week. That was Purdue, Iowa. Iowa, 11.5 point favorite. Joey picked Purdue. He's going to pick up the win. Overall, Joey went 4-3. Kevin, you went 3-4.
That's about right.
Yeah, I felt terrible taking Iowa. The idea of laying double digits. Oh, gosh. Never a good feeling.
Joey and Kevin's Weekly Locks.
All right, let's get to our picks here. I've got one, two, three, four, five, six, seven games. Okay.
Well, because Temple is playing this week, so that's
they the play USF. I look forward to that one. All right, we'll do the Temple one too. All right, let's start. Let's start with the game I just brought up. That is USC on the road at Notre Dame. Both teams coming off byes. Notre Dame favored by 6.5 points right now. When you look at the last couple of games, they've been decided by one score. Who you got?
I will take I'll take Notre Dame. And I think you can tell by my answer, I don't feel good about it. Mm-hmm. The struggles of Notre Dame and their offensive line up front, their inability to establish the run, they make me nervous. Don't know what they are. But at the same time, we don't know what USC is either. So since the game's at Notre Dame, I'll take Notre Dame.
I'm with you 100% just because I have no idea what USC is doing in the sense of who's going to show up. Both, again, coming off a bye, I do not trust Notre Dame's offense, but I can't even figure out USC. They get all the momentum. They want to prove, okay, we got a new guy that's there. They look good in Pullman. And then after that, you know, what they did against Utah was brutal. So the one sure thing I know is the coaching staff at Notre Dame. And we will just go forward with that. All right. Let's stay in the Pac-12. This is a really interesting one. Number 10, Oregon at UCLA at the Rose Bowl. Chip's boys are favored by 2. The Ducks defense is beat up. And it's Chip Kelly's Bruins that are favored in a game like this where Oregon's ranked. Whoo, I know you're waiting for me. I'm going with the Ducks. I'm going with Kayvon Thibodeau and He's been fantastic when he's healthy. I will go with Oregon over UCLA, and clearly I am not confident. But if I can get the Ducks and points, I will take the Ducks and points.
Okay, I like it. I'll go UCLA. And Oregon is one of those teams that is right there on the cusp. Like, if they continue to win, and Ohio State continues to win to bolster their resume, Oregon will be a team that we'll talk about later. But they haven't looked great.
Nope.
Anthony Brown had his best game against Ohio State, and then that offense has sort of tailed off some, C.J. Verdell being out. I'm going to go with UCLA.
I mean, Oregon, and I said this yesterday, but Oregon's got the best win all season to go into Columbus and win that game. But every other game, nail biter. They haven't looked good. You're just wondering what's going on. Yeah, I know Moorhead was out against the Stanford game. Like, we have a hard time understanding where the Ducks are when it comes to progress. Okay. Let's go to Clemson at Pitt, number 23, Pitt. Pitt, of course, ranked in the top 25. Clemson, not. The Panthers laying 3 points. Clemson hasn't scored more than 19 points again against an FBS team this season. Kenny Pickett, 20 touchdowns, one pick for the Panthers. Who you got?
This is amazing. I thought Kenny Pickett had 21 touchdowns, but if you say 20, I'll take it.
He could. Yeah, I'll look that up.
Yeah, I think it's 21. I'm going with Pitt. Now, this is interesting, and it's amazing. What a difference a year makes in college football. In the past however many years, there's no way you'd be thinking Pitt over Clemson, no matter how many points. But I like what Pickett's been doing. And I think that there are teams in the ACC that are like, this is our chance to pay back Clemson for what's been going on in the past few years. Let's get them back, and I'll go with Pitt.
And you're right. You're feeling really good about Kenny Pickett, because for you to come correct with the stats saying a lot, 21 touchdowns, one pick, nearly 2,000 yards. I'm going with Pitt as well.
Let me also add, Kev, it's amazing with those numbers in the ACC, he's not in the high. Why wouldn't he be in the Heisman conversation, especially in a year when nobody has run away with it?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great point. That's a fantastic point. He gets the chance to do it on a big stage there, where it's on ESPN. I think that's your 3:30 game. So we will learn a little bit more about Pitt as well as Clemson. Like, the Clemson offense is really tough to watch this year. I am stunned how tough it is to watch that team. Okay. Oklahoma State, number 8 in the country, coming off the win against Texas at Iowa State. The Cyclones laying 7. Oklahoma State's the team that's undefeated. Their defense is really good. Iowa State's defense is pretty good, too. Don't sleep on them. And they're still in the Big 12 hunt. Woo! That's a lot of points, man. That is a lot. And Oklahoma State showed me a lot doing what they did in Austin to come back and score 19 unanswered against Texas. I'm going to go with Oklahoma State.
Hey, look, can somebody call Spencer Sanders and just find out what his mood is for the weekend?
Yep.
Because honestly, if Spencer Sanders shows up, Oklahoma State is a good football team.
Mm-hmm.
I like them a lot. You just don't know what you're going to get. You don't know if you're getting turnover Spencer Sanders or talented, can make plays, run with the ball, sling it. But I'm going Oklahoma State also. More so because I'm holding out hope that when Oklahoma State and Oklahoma play, they'll both be 11-0.
That would be great.
I'm holding out hope that we have drama at the end.
Yes.
More things to talk about. If Oklahoma State get together at 11-0, we could be having conversations that involve two Big 12 teams getting into the playoff, Kev. That'd be a great conversation.
Really? You believe that?
They're both top 10 right now. I'm saying,
wow. And you know what? That depends on the play of Spencer Sanders, because Oklahoma State's defense will show up. And then, you know, that goes back to our conversation earlier to start the podcast. That may give us the Caleb Williams Heisman moment, because Oklahoma State's defense has been fantastic.
Yeah, he'll have a couple shots later.
That'll be great. So we're both with the Pokes here. Let's go to the SEC. Big story. First game since the official announcement that Ed Orgeron is out. Inspired football last week as the run game dominated Florida. LSU at Ole Miss. Good friends, Orgeron and Kiffin on the opposite end of the sidelines. Ole Miss favored by 9.
Here's the thing. The problem with LSU is they're really talented. They're a talented ball club. But again, which is, I mean, really why Coach O is getting fired. I think he's a terrific coach. And I think it's amazing that we're in a time when a couple years after a guy wins a national championship, he can also be fired. I mean, it's just an amazing. Like, Temple would love to have a national championship a couple years ago. Heck, they would sign that guy to a lifetime contract.
Are you kidding me? He wouldn't be able to leave North Philadelphia.
It is amazing this world we live in now, where it is a couple years. You're like, man, hey, what have you done for us lately? Mm-hmm. There are 125 schools out there that would take a national championship within the last 10 years. But I'm going to go. I think the pressure's off. I think Lane Kiffin enjoys playing in close, crazy games. I think LSU's going to show up again and at least make this thing interesting at the end.
Man, I'm curious to see how the LSU players step up, right? Just with the emotional week and then the questions. It's a very weird vibe. Not only do you lose a head coach in less than 24 months after winning a national title, but they all know he's gone, yet he's still coaching. That to me is such a weird, really weird vibe.
I'm going to go with all your own plays. He could call a play. And you could be like, man, whatever, coach.
Yes.
Here's what we're going to do. Shut up. We ain't calling timeout, coach.
Yes.
Shut up. Here's what
sit this one out, coach. I'm Max Johnson. I want to be here in Baton Rouge next year. You will not.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going Ole Miss. You're going with LSU. All right.
Yep.
All right. Two more, buddy. Let's go with this is an interesting one. Wake Forest at Army.
I'll take Wake Forest, Kev.
Wow. You're not and laying the 3, no matter what.
Again, I have hopes that things get interesting at the end. I hope that Wake Forest gets into the ACC championship game, continues to win. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting story. I think because of the world we live in now, when I have to do the ranking show toward the end, I just want as much drama as we can get. So give me Wake. Would it be Wake and Pitt in the ACC championship game?
Is that in a year that we had high expectations for Carolina, high expectations for Clemson, high expectations for Miami, and then we got Pitt and Wake.
Give me that. I'm going with Wake. No matter what that number is against Army, let's go.
They deserve it. Those two programs are winning, so it's not a knock on them. And I'm with you. I'll take Wake laying the 3. Wake's coming off the bye. They can't stop the run, but they get a week extra to prepare for Army. I'm always worried about teams that don't have that extra week to get ready for Army and their rushing attack. So
you're not going
to
stop the run game. It doesn't.
You're not.
Yeah.
It's just containing it a little bit, right?
They could have slept in for that week. It ain't going to matter.
Rest the body. Play keep away with the offense. Long drives, right? Just long drives. All right. Our last one. Purdue pulling off the shocker last week at Iowa's homecoming. Now at home this weekend. And it's Wisconsin that's coming in favored by 3. Badgers have won 14 straight in this series. Purdue held Iowa to less than 100 yards rushing. I'm going with Purdue. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was about to change it. I'm going with Purdue.
Kev, that might be the worst pick in pick history.
Yeah. You know what that was? That was me running the RPO, and then I just pulled the ball back, and I just said, I'm just going to go. I'm just going to keep it. I'm not going to hand it off.
I mean, seriously, Ben Simmons? Get it out there. I'm going to take Purdue also. Scott, get Purdue. Let it come on out.
It's still the same pick. It's just we deliver it differently.
I feel better about it than you.
Yes, you do. I'll be the first one to tell you. You'll feel a lot better, but we'll still have the same result regardless.
Yeah.
All right. We will see how this plays out. Hey, looking forward to seeing you over the weekend. Hold up. Enjoy.
Hold up, Kev. You got to give us our 8th game.
Oh.
You got to tell us the number It's automatic who we got, but I need to know the number.
Are you going to take the other side no matter what, huh?
No matter what.
See, Taylor, I don't appreciate this. Let's get the exact number right now.
Oh, boy. This number is interesting.
Yes, it is. Temple at USF, you're getting the Bulls minus 2.5. So the Bulls are favored in that game. I will go with the Owls, and I will take the points in Tampa.
Oh, man. Who you feel better about, Kev, Temple or Purdue?
I feel better about Temple. You're getting points in Tampa? I feel better about that.
Okay.
I mean, Purdue, you're getting points at home, but who knows about Wisconsin? I honestly, like, they're trying to get their running game going and figure it out, but I do like David Bell a lot when it comes to Purdue's offense. As for Temple, DeJuan Mathis, I will take the Owls on the road. And if people could only look at Joey just giggling and cackling the entire time.
Oh, man. That's because to make you talk about actually like taking Temple, it warms my heart because you don't feel good about it inside. So you want them to win.
Don't put words in my mouth. Don't put words in my mouth. Don't describe my feelings about my alma mater.
I lean on your face.
I feel good. I just say I you're doing this as these poor listeners got to hear Temple, Temple USF, which was not on the docket. And you're doing it because you just want to torture me. That's all.
Temple is on the docket. Let's go.
Appreciate you. I'll see you next week.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
It's time to empty the notebook on the ESPN College Football Podcast.
Oh, one of our favorites, Sandra Adelson of ESPN.com, joining us now. Time to empty the notebook. Plenty to empty out after the first 7 weeks of the college football season. Andrea, great to have you on board as we get ready for a showdown of the ACC, where at the beginning of the season, I think everybody thought we would be favoring one side, but now it's the other side. And that is Pitt favored by 3 points, number 23 in the country. They're the team that's ranked as they host Clemson. What do you make of both these teams coming in? There's a lot to prove for a Pitt team that is feeling really good at where they position themselves right now in the Coastal and the ACC.
Pitt currently is the favorite to win the entire ACC, according to our ESPN FPI. And that obviously comes as a major surprise since Clemson has won the last 6 straight ACC championships. But I was having a text conversation with some family members. One of them's a Penn State fan. And he mentioned this about Pitt. I can't believe Pitt is favored. They don't like prosperity. And that essentially sums up the state of the Pitt program, right? Every time we think Pitt is on the verge of doing something great, a loss to Western Michigan happens, as was the case this year. Or a loss, pick any other year, pick any other team they should have beaten, and here we are with Pitt. So that's why if I'm Pat Narduzzi, I'm going to this game telling my guys, I don't care what FPI is. He doesn't even know what FPI is. He's told me that before, okay? I don't care about the polls. I don't care about favorites. We are the underdog. I would be selling that message to my Pitt players because Clemson has dominated the ACC. And just because they haven't looked great this year doesn't suddenly mean all of a sudden, well, it's going to be Pitt and everybody else. Pitt has a lot to prove. You're absolutely right, Kevin. And I was talking to their left tackle this week, Carter Warren, who told me, we always consider ourselves an underdog. And that's just because of the perception of where the program is. As for Clemson, I'm also selling the underdog message if I'm Dabo Sweeney.
No doubt.
When was the last time he could sit here and say, we're little old Clemson and no one believes in us? I don't know, 3 years ago, he can trot it out again. So yeah, I'd be selling the same message too, because we've all written Clemson off, even though, by the way, they've only got one loss in the ACC. So it's not as if they are completely out of the conversation. Yes, they need some help, but they're still in the thick of the race. Let's say they win out and NC State drops a couple of games, which NC State has the same reputation as Pitt, by the way. Clemson might be back in Charlotte. So I am not ready to write off Clemson. And I can tell you from conversations I've had with people inside the ACC, they're not ready to write off Clemson either. It's write off Clemson at your own peril, because they remain the most talented team in the conference. They just haven't been able to put things together offensively just yet. And whether that comes against Pitt or at some other point in the schedule, even though they haven't looked like they can put it together, would anybody be shocked if they actually do at some point this season?
The interesting matchup will be Clemson's defense next to Kenny Pickett, and Pickett's had a phenomenal season. Joey Galloway and I just talked about how come, you know, 21 touchdowns, one pick, Kenny Pickett in a year where the Heisman race is wide open, how come his name is not often mentioned? That will be a matchup I think everybody circles. All right, how's Pickett handle that tough Clemson defense? I want to go with the Clemson offense. Like, do they feel like they've turned the corner? Or is there any idea where the identity of this offense is, especially when we hear the numbers that they have yet to score more than 19 points against an FBS team, which is just startling this season?
Clemson offensively is in the same conversation as Vanderbilt. That's wow. Really not a situation you want to be in, especially when you're a program that's used to averaging, what, 40, 45 points a game. Now you can't even get three touchdowns a game. It's a struggle to even watch. And Tony Elliott said this week, this is the longest into a season he's ever gone without knowing what the identity of the offense is, Kevin. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is an indictment of where they are right now. And I know Tony has taken a lot of heat and a lot of criticism for what's happened with the offense this year. But ultimately, these players on the field, they have to start making plays. We are talking about inexplicable drops from veteran receivers. We are talking about plays that DJ Uiagalelei needs to make, easy throws that he seems to be shot putting or aiming instead of actually just throwing and relying on his fundamentals. And we're talking about blocking better on the offensive line. These are easy layups, as Tony likes to say, that Clemson, for whatever reason, whether they're in their heads, whether they feel a lot of pressure, whether the expectations have gotten to them, whether the criticism on social media now is starting to build up in their minds, whatever the case may be, the players are not executing the simple things right now. So until they're able to do that, Clemson is going to struggle on offense. This is not a complicated offense. This isn't a scheme that suddenly defenses are like, we don't know what they're going to do out there. And mm-hmm. That's part of the criticism that Tony Elliott has received, is that the offense seems to be a little bit too simplistic. But when you're making plays in a simplistic offense, it works. Mm-hmm. It's just that the players aren't making the plays that we're used to seeing. And I have talked to probably half the coaches in the ACC at this point about what is going on with Clemson? And every single one will point to something different happening on offense, which means it's a total failure on the offense. Some point to the offensive line. Some point to not having a Travis Etienne type back who can make plays out of the backfield in the passing game. Some point to not having Trevor. Some point to the receivers just not playing at an elite level. That's everything in the offense. So again, it's hard after watching six games to sit here and say, oh, yeah, they're about to turn the corner. I have not seen any indication that they are about to turn the corner. But again, if they do, I will not be surprised, because this remains one of the most talented, if not the most talented offense in the ACC.
We will wait and see how that plays out. And you are getting ready to go to the North Carolina State-Miami game. And that is another storyline. You brought up NC State, where, you know, the minute you start to feel good about the program, boom, they get that punch in the face. But at least NC State could talk about having some type of momentum at a certain point this season. We have not been able to say that about Miami. Losing another heartbreaker to North Carolina this past weekend. Where are we right now with Manny Diaz and the progress or lack thereof with the Hurricanes?
This is a team that went into the season ranked in the preseason top 15 and had a solid year last year, despite having COVID issues themselves across their roster and with Manny Diaz. They still were able to put together a top 25 season. That's why the expectations going into this year were so high. And it just hasn't come together for them for a whole bunch of reasons. Derek King obviously is now out for the year. And even before he got hurt, He wasn't playing very well. Their veterans on defense have not played very well. Suddenly they can't tackle, which I know drives Manny Diaz to probably say a few expletives to himself as he's watching the tape, because he's now the defensive coordinator calling the plays on defense. And these are guys that he has relied on that aren't doing their job. And they've had some divisions in the locker room with older players, younger players. Manny's trying to find a good balance for getting younger players in there when the veterans aren't doing what they need to do. That's caused some issues as well. So when we talk about how it's just like the Clemson offense that's not functioning in Miami, it's everything that hasn't been functioning completely together cohesively. And that has obviously turned up the heat on Manny Diaz. And the big question is, can they salvage the season, and will Manny Diaz return at the end of the year? I don't have an answer to that. And the folks that I've talked to have made it seem like they need to see how the entire season plays out. They're not ready to make any judgments yet, because if they can get these young players that they're going to be playing more to play better, Manny can show them, hey, look, we're building something here. All these young players that I've recruited into this program are now playing, and they're playing well. So imagine how well they'll play next year if I get another year. Look at the recruiting class that we have committed. They have a really solid recruiting class committed. The quarterback, Tyler Van Dyke, is a freshman. He's actually played pretty well. If he can put together a full game instead of playing good in the second half of games, okay, that's another thing that Manny can point to. So I still think that there remains something for Manny to prove here over the next part of the season that will go into determining whether he's going to get another year. No decisions have been made at Miami, but it's certainly disappointing because it feels as if they've taken a step back after an 8-win season. It's 1 year up, the next year down, 1 year up, the next year down. And it's the continuing question over the last 15 years about Miami that still doesn't have an answer. And I know that is extremely frustrating for their fans and for former players who just wonder once again, what's going on? Why can't we get this fixed?
Right now, if they were to pull off the upset, by the way, NC State's favored by 3, number 18 in the land, the Wolfpack sitting there at 5-1, that game over on ESPN2 on Saturday night. I'm just curious to see. This just feels like a close game. I'm curious to see how Miami handles the adversity late in the game, because that was a heartbreaker. You saw afterwards with Manny and the conversation he had with Mac Brown that he literally thought, we win this game, we could turn the corner. And you walk off the field just saying, now we're 2 games below 500, sitting there at 2-4. What's next? And it's not going to be an easy one against NC State at home, especially in that environment, because we do not feel like there's a home field advantage with Miami right now. It could get ugly real quick if they trail early on, maybe double digits against the Wolfpack down on their home turf in South Florida. Let's stay in the state. Because Andrea, Booger McFarland and I, on yesterday's podcast, were talking about this. And Booger posed the question, and I took a step back, and it was really tough to figure this out. Because when you look at the state of Florida through the years, and this is decades, this is pre-Bobby Bowden. Usually, during when Bobby came in, and then you have the Spurrier years, then you had the Miami dominance, of course, of Jimmy Johnson, and then Butch Davis, then the Urban Meyer era, Jimbo, it's cyclical with these three teams. There's always a fantastic team up top and then a middling team and a team that's rebuilding to come back. And that features Miami, Florida State, and Florida. You can't say that this year. You can't even say, well, those guys are down, UCF is coming up, or USF had that one small little window. And that comes back to the Florida conversation, because we thought entering this season, the Gators would be at the top part of the food chain. And coming off that stunning loss where the defense just gave up left and right, the same play over and over again when it came to running the football. The big question surrounding Dan Mullen is the quarterback. And you're a Gator alum. You're fully aware of what the Gainesville faithful are saying right now. What's the vibe like right now surrounding this, the question at quarterback and Dan Mullen, Anthony Richardson, and Emory Jones moving forward?
The vibe since the season opener, Kevin, has been play Anthony Richardson. What are you doing? Why are you only getting him in for limited reps? Because he's so dynamic every time he's on the field. And every time Dan is asked, it's the same thing. Well, he's not ready yet. He's not ready yet. He's not ready yet to run the full offense. When is he going to be ready? Mm-hmm. At this point, when you look at Emory Jones and the mistakes that he's made and the interceptions that he's thrown, you've given him half a season. He's clearly not the answer right now. So why not at least try to give Anthony Richardson more reps? I mean, what he did in the second half, once they actually went to him, mm-hmm. was outstanding. It was just that the defense couldn't figure out how to stop the same play. And that's a completely different conversation, Kevin, because why Dan has had this loyalty to Todd Grantham is another frustration among the Gator faithful. And honestly, the defense had played better until that game. Yep. That was just a complete collapse on the defensive side of it. And Dan was asked again on Wednesday, what are you gonna do about the quarterbacks? Now, they've got the open day. They got Georgia next week. There's no way he is going to answer that question openly and honestly, nor should he, right? Mm-hmm. He's not going to go ahead and reveal what the game plan is going to be. But if they're going to have any chance against Georgia and that defense and those guys up front who are unmovable, the only thing that beats that physical power is speed. Mm-hmm. If Anthony Richardson is starting that game and getting a chance to play the entire game, I think they can try to at least combat that power that Georgia has up front with what Anthony can do. I'm not saying Florida's going to win. I have mm-hmm. no idea how they're going to keep it within 14 at this point, given what we've seen from Florida against Kentucky and LSU. But I just think Anthony gives them a better chance because of how dynamic he is when he runs the ball. Okay. Is he a great passer right now? He's not Danny Werfel, mm-hmm. but it's what he can do with his legs that makes him a threat. And so that's why Gator fans and Gator Nation has just been so frustrated, because they feel as if this entire situation has been completely mismanaged from the beginning of the year. And quarterback was the biggest question going into the season. Losing Kyle Trask, everybody knew it was going to look different, was going to be more of a run-heavy type offense, which is fine. But who's the best running quarterback you have? Mm-hmm. It's Anthony Richardson. Play him more. That's the bottom line.
You mentioned loyalty. Is that, loyalty with Grantham and then loyalty to Emory Jones. Let's not forget, Emory has followed Dan here and waited patiently behind Kyle Trask to get the opportunity. Is this a question of just too much loyalty, not just to your DC, but to the current quarterback?
It's a great question, because you're right. Emory waited. Mm-hmm. It's very rare to find a quarterback to sit there and wait his turn before he gets a chance to start. They gave him packages when Kyle was the quarterback to go in there and get some plays, get some experience, knowing that he was going to be the guy. But at this point, with where the season is,
yep,
and the heat that now has been turned on Dan Mullen, how can you continue to rely on loyalty when you have to win games? You mm-hmm. have to do something. And the guy that you've been loyal to hasn't gotten the job done the last few weeks. So you got to make a change. And I don't want to sit here and blame everything on Emory. He played a great game against Alabama.
Yes, he did.
He kept them in that game.
Final three quarters. Yep.
Absolutely. Yep. Final three quarters. And he didn't have Anthony Richardson looking he wasn't looking over his shoulder. When is Anthony coming into the game? Mm-hmm. And I think those three quarters, he was more settled into the offense. And maybe that is because he didn't have to worry about getting out of the game. And then when am I going to get back in? And what is that rotation and rhythm going to be? So I think Emory has made some progress this year, but Anthony is just so dynamic. Every time he's got the ball in his hands, he has a chance to break one for a touchdown. And you can't really say the same thing about Emory right now. He's just a different player, and that's fine. But if you're not winning games at Florida, okay, going 8-4 every year, Kevin, you know this as well as I do, mm-hmm. and losing to LSU embarrassingly 2 years in a row, mm-hmm. and losing to Kentucky twice in 4 years, that's not going to get the job done.
No way.
No one's going to be happy about that. And right now, They've got the number six recruiting class in the SEC. Again, you're Florida. It is inexplicable to have the number six recruiting class in the best state for recruiting. So there's a lot that Dan has to do better if he's going to continue forward as the Gator coach to get this program to a place where, forget about like Georgia. How about beating Kentucky and LSU? That would be a good start.
Fair point. Absolutely. Especially the way they lost to Kentucky. They couldn't generate any type of offense. Special teams playing a role. And then I get back to one thing, too. And we started this when we started the Florida conversation. LSU could not run the ball for multiple weeks. And then they give up 287. And you know, Ty Davis-Price breaks the record against this Florida defense because they were running the same exact plays. Booger McFarland said they ran 14 straight plays. They just switched sides each time and they still couldn't stop it. It's inexcusable with the talent that Florida gets each and every year. And we will see if Dan can change. Listen, you could turn the entire narrative and change the entire fan base around if you show up and beat Georgia and Jacksonville. That saves the season. No one's saying that, but that does save the season, at least to respectability. But you're right. The pressure will be on. We will see how this plays out. They've got another week to stew over who's going to be the quarterback and discuss it. Andrea, safe travels to Miami. Appreciate you joining us. Looking forward to having you back on the podcast.
Thanks for having me again, Kevin.
Good stuff there from Andrea. Fantastic. I love when we have a passionate reporter insider giving us great details and emptying the notebook around the ACC as well as the SEC. And Joey was great as well with his picks. Before we go, there's a great game on ESPN Radio this weekend, Tennessee at Alabama. Tune in Saturday, October 23rd, 6 p.m. Eastern time. And I want to remind you guys, the ESPN College Football Podcast will be back on Sunday. Paul Feinbaum and Matt Berry. Those guys will be recapping the weekend. Don't miss it. Taylor Schwenk, shout out to you. Is that what kind of soccer jersey are we wearing there?
Oh, this is West Ham Premier League, baby. Got a big game in the Europa League today against Genk.
So, West Ham. Don't you got a new head coach too? Don't you have Nick as your new head coach?
No, we got David Moyes, who used to be the Everton and Man United head coach or manager, boss, if you will, over there.
I was referring to Ted Lasso. You watched Ted Lasso?
No, that went right over my head.
Oh, Taylor, you watched Ted Lasso though?
No, I've never seen it. I've drawn a line at, I don't want another subscription service. I have enough. So I've drawn the line at Apple TV Plus. They have enough of my money. So, but maybe I should. Everyone loves Ted Lasso.
Listen, I highly recommend getting Ted Lasso and just binging for a month on that in the morning show and then just cut bait. Just 1 month, $4.99. I think that's what it is. And just watch both those shows and then just move on. Worth it. Ted Lasso is fantastic.
What if we try find fellow college football friends to talk a little Ted Lasso, maybe around the holidays, a little extra pod TV talk only.
I'm down with that. That would be great. I actually made a comment about the reference. I was saying something about Nate, who's now the head coach at West Ham. And I made a comment about it on social the other day. One of the writers from Ted Lasso weighed in on it and told me, stick around for season 3. Don't bail. And I'm like, are you kidding me? There's no way I'm bailing. You actually got me so hooked on this show. It's worth a watch. Taylor, good stuff. We will talk next week and enjoy college football this weekend, buddy.